You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Wednesday. We're in the home stretch for college football. We're in the home stretch for the NFL with the playoffs. Feels like we're in turn four and we have two flat tires. Trying to make it to the finish line here. You got injuries, you got COVID, you got coaches out, quarterbacks out, backup quarterbacks in, backup quarterbacks who have been released. Like, it's been crazy here. But we go into the playoffs this weekend, and the Cleveland Browns will not be fully assembled. Also, there's a chance that Jaylen Waddle, the Alabama wide receiver, widely thought of as the best receiver on the team when the season started, he will be available, cleared to practice, and might be able to play in Monday night's title game. There was some doubt yesterday, and I reached out to my college football source about this. I wanted to know if he knew anything about Justin Fields. Like, is there an injury there? Because I don't know if there's been an official diagnosis with him. Maybe it's just a bruise. I have no idea. But that was a car accident that he was in. And the way he turned, the way he was hit, I don't know, hip, back, kidneys, all the above. But I wanted to know, and he said he didn't have any information on that. And then you start to wonder about the COVID cases at Ohio State. Could that impact the national title game? And my source said, as of now, it will not. But, you know, this was only Tuesday when we were talking. So here we are. It's Wednesday. We still have a lot of time before Monday night's title game. But from what I was told yesterday, that it would take a lot to cancel the national title game. But also, if you look at what's happened with the NFL, it will take an awful lot to cancel an NFL game. In fact, I don't think it's possible. With everything that we went through during the regular season, and then I wondered, and I'm afraid to have Todd ask the NFL, because we ask about Kevin. Do you want to do that, Todd?
No,
I don't want you to do that. You know what? Reach out to Florio and just say, has he heard of any contingency plans? Because the Browns play the Steelers on Sunday night. That's the late game, the final game. Is there any contingency plans? If there are any more COVID tests, any more positives here, could they move it to Monday? Doesn't mean Kevin Stefanski is going to be able to coach, but I'm just curious about that. You know, if Florio has heard anything about it, don't ask the NFL. There's a line about the old Texas stadium that there was a hole in the roof so God could watch his team, the Cowboys. I don't think it's true, but I know that there seems to be a team that he might not be pulling for, and that's the Cleveland Browns, because they finally made the playoffs. 18-year drought. Head coach, key offensive lineman, they test positive. They're going to miss the playoff game. You know, when you start to think about dynasties, the Browns were one of the first dynasties under Paul Brown. And it's been a rough half century. The stadium known as the Factory of Sadness is... doesn't that sound like a heavy metal band from Germany? Ladies and gentlemen, Factory of Sadness.
God.
Yeah. Then Art Modell moved the team to Baltimore, got another team. They only made the playoffs once in the 2000s. You beat the Steelers, you get in, happy day, Northeast Ohio. It feels like the team is still cursed again. And I hope that they're able to get close to what they need to get to be competitive in this game with the Steelers. But not having Kevin Stefanski, their play caller, head coach, who's done a great job with Baker Mayfield, I mean, that's a damaging blow. You can lose players, but you're losing a star player, in my opinion, with Stefanski. And I'm not trying to overstate something here. I think Stefanski has done a wonderful job. And you'll remember last year when I talked about Fredo Kitchens, this is the same team. But Stefanski came in and has done a really good job. And I think kind of relocating their identity of who they are and what they need to be successful. And with him not being in there as the play caller, you don't have your offensive lineman. I mean, and your offensive line has been your strength. So it's a really big blow for Cleveland going into this game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Congratulations to Devontae Smith winning the Heisman. You know, I know that we look at this award and it's basically for quarterbacks. I love that the voters, all 900 of us, looked at this and said, who is the best player? Not who is the best player on the best team with the best stats. Devontae Smith, to me, was different than any other player in college football this year. There are a lot of quarterbacks who threw for a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, great completion percentage. There was one Devontae Smith. And I'm glad he won the Heisman Trophy. I don't want to say I feel sorry for Trevor Lawrence, but there's a little bit of, I don't know, sadness. It's a career achievement award for somebody who, if you said that's your son, and this is what he accomplished in college football, as a parent, you would feel really proud. And not that you wouldn't with Devontae Smith or, you know, Mac Jones, Kyle Trask. You know, they all had wonderful seasons here. Trevor Lawrence, I think, took on the pressure of being the face for college football. You know, they didn't get to a national title game. He won one national title game. Didn't get there this year, obviously. Never won a Heisman. But I think he can walk out of that room with his head held high of what he accomplished in college football. And I think he should be recognized as one of the great college quarterbacks of all time. But Devontae Smith, it was his night, and there's just something about him. When he gets the ball, how many players, when they get the ball, do you think, honestly think, they can score? And that's what I always thought when Devontae Smith got the ball. No matter where he got it, he could score. And that kind of weapon, immeasurable. And he ended up winning, and it wasn't even close last night. Yeah, Paul.
We talked about this before, but the Heisman, it's not about greatness. It's about story. And last year, Trevor Lawrence, he was expected. He did everything expected. Last year, 2019, 36 touchdowns, 8 picks, 4,000 yards, great season. Exactly what you expect from that kid. But unfortunately, Joe Burrow came out of nowhere, blossomed, took LSU to where they hadn't been in a while, and the story was easier to vote for.
Well, Joe Burrow had the greatest season I think a college quarterback has ever had. And, you know, granted, he had a very good team, skill position, all of those things. But, you know, so is Tua. So is Trevor. I mean, they've all had a lot of weapons around them. But what you have, you know, been putting up these numbers now, it's a quarterback-driven award. And I'm glad that the voters looked at Devontae Smith and said, he's the best player in college football. And I firmly thought that probably five or six weeks ago. And even when, you know, we were talking about the Heisman, I said, I think he's winning it. I think he's going to win it. And, he did comfortably. Paulie has some breaking news with Trevor Lawrence.
This is going to shock you.
Okay.
You're in your car.
I'm going to sit down.
Trevor Lawrence has announced he is going pro and leaving.
Oh,
Clemson.
My God.
Yeah. Who saw that coming? He just posted on the Instagrams and the Twitters.
Even Captain Obvious Fritzy knew that was coming.
I just saw it coming a mile away.
Thank you, Todd. There's a new mayor coming to NBC Comedy. It's Thursday. Ted Danson, Holly Hunter, Bobby Moynihan star, and Mr. Mayor premieres January 7th on NBC. You can watch on Peacock, and you can listen on our great radio affiliates around the country. I believe we have a poll question, McLevin.
I went with that silly one from hour one. Would you rather lose a Heisman and win the title game or win the Heisman and lose the title game? 71% said they'd rather lose the Heisman but win the national title game. Okay. And I think they're all lying. Come on.
You don't want to come off as selfish.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Privately, though. This is from Jason Kelsey. He is an offensive lineman for the Eagles. And he says that he wants to clear the air and more accurately depict what happened during the game on Sunday with the Eagles and Washington. At the end of the third quarter, I was told on the bench that Nate Sudfeld was going into the game. I went up to Doug Peterson and I asked him if he was taking Hurts out. He said, yes, I think Nate's earned the right to play. I said, everyone else is staying in? ? He said, absolutely. I then went to find Sudfeld, started taking snaps on the sidelines with him, called the other linemen over, and had them listen to his snap count to make sure everyone was on the rhythm of his cadence, and then went out for the next drive. So that is from Jason Kelsey, the center for the Philadelphia Eagles, trying to maybe back up his head coach, Doug Peterson. Although we had Albert Breer on, from the Monday Morning Quarterback, and Albert said that he got the impression that this was a decision that was made up top in the organization, maybe Howie Roseman, the GM, that they were going to not try to win this game, that they did want to go from 9 to 6 in the draft. It's a heavy statement there, but if you see Doug Peterson when he was asked, I think Monday, about this, like who made the call there, and Doug had a hard time answering that because maybe Doug is not the one who made that decision to put in Nate Sudfeld. It's a standalone game, playoff implications, and you got national TV. If you want to start Nate Sudfeld, I don't think there is anywhere near the vitriol that has been attached to this. Or you're down a couple of touchdowns. You're down 3, and then you decide you're going to bring him in. The timing of it, I think, has thrown a lot of people off. Do I think they were trying to lose the game? I don't think they were trying to win the game. Yes, Steve.
So having never played football, I don't really understand how the communication works, you know, certainly all week during practice and then on the sidelines during a game. But is it possible that, say, the lineman, the offensive lineman, know during the week that, hey, Nate Sudfeld might come in, the backup might come in at some point, but the running backs wouldn't? I could see how that would work, that maybe the wide receivers and running backs are like the skill position guys. They're not aware of the coach's plans to, we might play the backup at some point in the game, but the linemen would be told that.
But I think you had Brandon Graham, who's a defensive player, right, McLovin, that he claims
I believe he said he knew.
And he's a defensive player.
But who knows? You know, there's so many shades of gray here. Like, is it possible that they said Sudfeld might, like you said, might come in? But also, too, I'm sorry, and I keep coming back to this, like, lose a locker room. Is there a guy on that roster that you want back? No. They're a bunch of overpaid, old, disappointing draft picks. I mean, there's serious problems.
Fly, Eagles, fly.
They won 4 games, and their best players are all 35 years old.
Yes, Todd.
Jason Kelce goes on to say, I know we can win games with Nate because I know Suddy can play. It didn't work out Sunday, but as always, that's not just on him. Is there anyone blaming Nate Sudfeld?
No. What is Jason Kelce going to say? Hey, we had no chance with Suddy in there, but hey, I'm glad he got a chance. Of course he's going to stick up for Sudfeld and his head coach here. Yeah, McLovin.
Kelce did take – he did – put that snap in his foot. I don't know what
yes,
that
he did.
So yeah. Kelce's a little part of the play.
Yeah. So people are speculating that maybe Howie Roseman, the GM, asked Doug Peterson to blow the game so they can move up in the draft.
Mission accomplished. Give him a raise.
Well, now Philadelphia can finally get a wide receiver since they've whiffed the last couple of drafts. You have Devontae Smith. You have Jamar Chase. Kyle Pitts. Yes, McLovin.
You were talking with Albert Breer about them now in the quarterback derby in the draft. That's too much to handle as an Eagles fan.
God.
Another quarterback in that room?
No, we can't do that.
But you said when you were talking about it with Breer, it all made sense, though. I was like, wait, you're right. 6, they can move up to 2.
But also the Dolphins at 3. Albert Breer said, you're the Dolphins. You have that 3rd pick because of the trade with the Texans. Chan Gailey, the offensive coordinator for the Dolphins, has resigned. And I wonder what that's going to do for the play calling for Tua Tagovailoa with this year coming up. I don't know if this is attached to – I'm not in on the inner workings here usually with NFL coaches, but if Chan Gailey resigned / got fired because maybe he stunted the development of Tua Tagovailoa. But I will say this about Tua. And it's not – and I know I got criticized by people when I said this earlier in the year. Tua was tentative. He doesn't look like he has great arm strength. It looks like he puts his entire body. It's like, you know, when John McEnroe would hit a forehand volley, it looked like he was using every part of his body to hit it. But also look at the plays that were called. Very little, it felt like, was downfield, over the middle. There are a lot of dump-offs here. And when this was pointed out to me by a source and said, keep an eye on this because – you know, Tua is going to be compared to Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, and that's not fair, but he's going to be. And the Dolphins know they have a playoff-caliber roster. They will do their due diligence here, and, you know, it's basically an audition for him. Ryan Fitzpatrick, to me, felt like the better quarterback for them. But I don't know, you're going to keep him on the roster? Because it felt like they had a different game plan for Ryan Fitzpatrick than they did for Tua. Now, I do think Tua was better than he's being publicized, featured, because of Herbert and Burrow, especially Herbert, they were so good. And therefore, Tua didn't have a great year. He didn't have a great year. Herbert did. And Burrow was on his way to having statistically a great year. But Tua, his team had a very good year, didn't make the playoffs. But I just think it's worth keeping an eye on with that situation. Because judging from afar and even talking to a source on this, I don't know if you can be completely sold on Tua with what you've seen so far. And we've seen teams get sold on somebody after the first year. Who did I talk to yesterday where I said you could have Trevor Lawrence or you could have Justin Herbert? Who did we have?
Was that Daniel Jeremiah?
Daniel Jeremiah, whose job is to assess talent, quarterbacks coming out of college. And he said Justin Herbert. But he says, I know more about him. You know, he's the analyst for their games on radio. He got to see him at the pro level do it. And I found that amazing. Because if I would have said to you at the draft, the Chargers are going to have the best quarterback in this draft, and you would take Justin Herbert over Trevor Lawrence once they get to the NFL, you'd say I was crazy. It still sounds crazy to say it. But Justin Herbert has already done. If you said Trevor Lawrence has 27 touchdown passes his rookie year, they'd probably go, I had a pretty good year. Justin Herbert had 31. Now, they should have been a playoff team. Their coach gets fired. They found ways to lose games that I didn't know were possible. But, you know, Justin Herbert, through all of that and the injuries, performed admirably. And I wonder about Trevor Lawrence. Like, what is the expectation level for Trevor Lawrence in his first year? At least 25 touchdowns, right? A couple of rushing touchdowns, feels like. But the expectation level for these quarterbacks is greatly heightened. I remember we didn't assess quarterbacks until year three. When Steve McNair, Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, he had to wait 3 years. He had to wait after what behind Chris Chandler. Carson Palmer sat a year. Rivers sat. Like, that's the way it used to be. Not anymore. Yeah, Paul.
And the other thing is the starters get benched fast. Remember Eli Manning and they had Daniel Jones got drafted? And like, well, it'll be Eli's last year. He'll play at least half the season. Daniel Jones had like four completions in a row in the preseason. Everyone goes, get him in there. Let's go.
All right, we'll take a break. We're going to check in with the Cleveland Browns. Are we going to stay with that poll question, McLovin, or are you going to do something different?
I got some more options after the break.
Oh, okay. That's a tease. That's called a tease in the business. No word on Jared Goff, although it feels like Wolford is probably going to be the starter. I'm guessing that Sean McVay.
Or McVague.
See, I mean, you can't.
I'm not taking credit.
I know, but it felt like that.
I got beat up a little bit on social media, and I've responded to at least one person that said I should have given you more love. And
But you're trying to pacify me by doing my joke back, my play on words back to me.
I did a little bit.
Yeah. And you didn't say, hey, as you said in the first hour, he's Sean McVay.
I was trying to take credit for that. Like, I came up with that first.
Todd turned into Jared Scoff at that joke.
Oh.
No?
You guys are crushing me right now.
Okay. Workshop it.
But McVay was actually a lot better than my reaction was to that.
So. Turn your head and Jared cough. That wasn't any good.
No, I feel like
it
you just tried to top me there.
Know.
You just pulled a Todd move.
That didn't work out.
I know.
That one didn't work out.
But you see, I admit when I
you
do that.
I don't. I refuse. I don't want any comedians writing material for me. I don't want anything.
Because what you do is you'll say the joke again. You just say it slower, and it's
giving it one more chance to get some type of positive reaction, but it never works out.
Yeah, Jared Scoff. 21 after the hour, we'll check in with the Cleveland Browns coming up next here on the Dan Patrick Show. I've told you about Built Bar, and you know I kept them in my office. Like I, you know, get a box of Built Bars, and I keep them in there. And then I thought, you know what? Let me share the wealth. It was around Christmas, holiday season. So I put him out in the mailroom.
That was a mistake.
Yes.
On your part.
Yeah.
Because now Todd has discovered them, and he has... You don't work out, but you eat a lot of them.
I do. I somehow convinced myself that that would be okay to just, you know, dive into those. And just all the bright colors that they're in and all the cool names and like key lime pie and like cheesecake and just things I've never seen before in a protein bar. So I'm like,
low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. So if you're looking to lose weight, you don't want to eat some cardboard snack. Usually when somebody says, oh, it's healthy for you, and you eat it and you go, this is like sawdust. That's not the case with Built Bar. BuiltBar.com, promo code DP, get 20% off your first order. Promo code DP, 20% off at Built Bar. Why not eat something that's good for you that actually tastes good? Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Go the extra mile. Very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van that you could win in Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. To enter, get official rules, visit foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com by January 24th. Mercedes-Benz vans. This in from Adam Schefter. Browns training facility remains closed today per source. Team is continuing to prepare for Sunday night's wild card game virtually while awaiting additional test results. Doug Deacon is the radio color analyst for the Browns. He spent 14 years as an offensive tackle for the Browns, and good to have Doug back on the show. Doug, where do we stand here trying to prepare for a playoff game that this city has waited 18 years for, the franchise has waited, and you're not going to have a head coach or one of your best offensive linemen?
It's going to be a tough task, and obviously the Steelers are getting some guys back that did not play last week. So I think, you know, the key to the game is going to be if the Browns can establish their running game and win the turnover battle.
But also, you're losing an offensive lineman who's been to the Pro Bowl a couple times, and you lose Kevin Stefanski. What one will be more impactful? Which loss more impactful on Sunday?
Well, that's a toss-up because I think, you know, when you look at Baker and in the pocket, you know, if you get pressure in his face, he's not the tallest guy, so he has a little bit of a problem there. So Betonio is stout at the line of scrimmage. But on the other hand, Kevin Stefanski has built a great relationship with Baker and, you know, kind of brought Baker that we thought we were going to get out of what we have.
And, I think Stefanski is underrated in what he's done because, you know, he's a great play caller and he's been that calming voice, I think, for Baker Mayfield with considering what you had with Freddie Kitchens last year. What do you think has been the biggest difference in this team this year as opposed to last year?
Well, I think, you know, we used to have a coach, Dave Adolph. He used to say, do you want to be a professional football player or you want to be a professional that plays football? And I think Kevin has turned them into a bunch of professionals that play football.
What is it, though, that you're seeing? Because it feels like there's no drama there this year.
Well, yeah, the discipline, during the coronavirus, there were some people that didn't adhere to what the rules were, so they were let go. And, he was just very calmly, you know, maintained the respect of the football team. And, Freddie was a great guy. I would have loved to play for Freddie, but I think sometimes Freddie wanted the guys to like him rather than respect him.
How big is this? How important is this for this city and this franchise that after 18 years they're back in the playoffs?
Oh, I mean, you could see the people walking out of the stadium last week with tears in their eyes. I mean, it's something they've waited for, and there's a generation of Browns fans that have never seen the Browns in the playoffs. And, it's been a tough pill to swallow here.
Well, you made the playoffs, I think, what, 4 years?
4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going against the Steelers as well. So, you know, you don't need added incentive, but it's certainly there considering what the Steelers have done to the Browns, in particular in Pittsburgh, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, when I played, we went 0-14 during my 14 years over Three Rivers, but we had lost a year before and the year after I retired, so they can't blame it all on me. We've stayed in every hotel in Pittsburgh trying to change the karma.
Well, the problem is Mean Joe Green was still on the other side and you still had Chuck Noll and Terry Bradshaw. What was it like to go against that steel curtain?
Well, you know, it was one of those, regardless of how good they were, you know, you always gave it your best shot. But they, you know, up front, you know, obviously you talked about Joe, and then you had Dwight, and you had LC, and you had Ernie. But then behind them, you had Ham and Lambert. And they were loaded. I mean, you throw in Mel Blunt in the back end and Donnie Shell. They were always physical football games. And there was one over there that we should have won. Unfortunately, the referee blew a call, and because of it, we ended up losing.
Single toughest defensive player you played against in your 14 years?
I tell you, a couple of them. I think Leroy Selman, Joe Klecko, Coy Bacon. I would say those guys were, you know, the top of Alvin Bethea. I mean, Alvin, I played twice a year for 13 years, and Alvin was one of the greats.
Joe Klecko is not in the Hall of Fame, is he, Doug?
No, he deserves it.
He does.
To make the Pro Bowl at three different positions, that's quite an accomplishment. Much like, you know, we have Clay Matthews, who finally got into the final 15, and he played 19 years and played at a high level for 19. So hopefully Clay gets in this year.
Well, what happened is Klecko got overshadowed by Gastineau. I think that, you know, he kind of sucked all the attention out of that team.
Yeah, but when we came into the line of scrimmage, the one guy we were looking for was Klecko because he was a disruptive force.
Oh, man.
And he was, about 6'1" or 6'2", and he'd just pick you up and carry you back to the quarterback, and he just kind of smile and do his little pigeon-toed walk.
So how do you think this plays out on Sunday night, Doug?
Well, unfortunately, it'd be nice to know who we're going to have. And I think, you know, we have some people in the secondary that didn't play last week that, you know, really hurt us. So hopefully we can get Denzel Ward and back and kick Kevin Johnson, which would help us because, you know, Pittsburgh has kind of struggled with the run and they've become a pass first team, and you need all the defensive backs you can. So as the week goes on, hopefully we'll get Denzel and Kevin Johnson back.
Good luck, Doug. Thank you. We appreciate you joining us as always.
My pleasure.
That's Doug Deacon, the Browns radio color analyst, spent 14 years Cleveland Browns offensive tackle. I think the steel curtain, I think the Steelers, that's the best defense I've ever seen in my 50 years or so, if not longer, watching football. You know, we love to attach names, you know, the fearsome foursome, the purple people eaters, doomsday defense, but steel curtain, when you had backups who were Pro Bowlers, it was just a formidable team. And he's right about Joe Klecko. You know, I'm trying single-handedly to get John Facenda into the Hall of Fame. I wrote a letter to David Baker, the head of the Hall of Fame, just to say, you know, let's consider him. The voice of the NFL should be in there. Joe Klecko might be my next one. I got to get Tony Boselli in there as well. But Joe Klecko, I was lucky to watch the Jets and the Giants back in the 80s, and I got to see greatness. I got to see Lawrence Taylor, and I got to see Joe Klecko. And look, I'm guilty because I'd go out there and I'd do a feature on Mark Gastineau because everybody knew Mark Gastineau. Sack dance, the whole thing. You know, he was married to Brigitte Nielsen. He drove a Rolls Royce. I mean, he wanted to be Joe Namath, had the hair. Joe Klecko, like that's one of those, if you say blue collar, like if you say that football player, he's blue collar. Joe Klecko would be the guy if I wanted to have a face to that. But what he did and how he did it, he was a great, great defensive player. Impactful defensive player. Yeah, Paul.
That Steeler team of the 70s, they really maxed out their defense with fame. Joe Green with the commercials he did. But Jack Lambert, you know, he had that look. With it, you know, some of his teeth were gone in different pictures. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. There's teeth missing. There's blood on it. And they became a brand. And I remember as a kid looking at Mel Blunt and saying, that doesn't look fair. He's so much bigger than the guys he's hitting. He was a defensive back. He had to be 6'4" and 220 pounds or something. And this is back when guys weren't even close to it. No one's like that now at defensive back.
When you see Mel Blunt, and he always has his black cowboy hat on, and you go, that dude was playing defensive back. And I can't imagine you know, getting hit by Mel Blount. But you had, you know, just so many great players. You know, they had Lambert, Ham, Elsie Greenwood. I mean, it was a great defense. Donnie Shell couldn't even start, and he was a Pro Bowl player. Yeah, McLevin.
What we're missing is those nicknames you said. How come we don't do that anymore? Those are incredible. I mean, we had the Legion of Boom, but I don't think there's any other nickname defenses out there right now.
Well, it felt like the last one was the Killer Bees with the Dolphins, doesn't it?
Orange Crush, that was a good one.
Yeah. But, yeah, we would always have these labels, great label. Fierce and Foursome, you know, when I was growing up, and, you know, and you're young and impressionable, and I kept thinking, it just seemed like Deacon Jones was, he literally wanted to kill your quarterback. And meanwhile, you had Rosie Taylor and Merlin Olsen, who couldn't have been nicer. I mean, Merlin Olsen used to be the florist guy, like FTD. He'd be, and you know, he was on, Little House on the Prairie or whatever it was. I mean, he was one of the nicest guys. And meanwhile, Deacon Jones, he scared the hell out of me, and I'm just watching the game. I could be, and then the Purple People Eaters with the Vikings, Doomsday Defense. Randy White and Joe Klecko, for some reason, I always look at them with their physicality, their style, and they remind me of each other for some reason. And Randy White was awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch. Yes, Todd.
I thought Monsters of the Midway was fun. New York Sack Exchange was terrific. I didn't realize that. I thought they all got along, Lyons and Klecko and Salam with Gastineau. He did an interview once years ago, Gastineau, saying we had him on up close, and he said when he was brought up, they brought up the names Lyons and Klecko. He goes, I didn't come here to talk about those pigs. Yeah. And then we asked him, what do you mean? He goes, they were piglets. He had no relationship with many of the players on the Jets, including the Sack Exchange guys.
Well, I think those guys looked at Gastineau as a phony. I think that there was certainly separation there. They were on the same line. They weren't on the same page. But yeah, Monsters of the Midway. Yeah, you could throw them in there as well. Yeah, McLovin.
Wait, it's Rosie Greer.
Taylor was with the Giants.
Free to Be You and Me singer. Was he a singer, actor too? I think he was.
Rosie Greer was a bodyguard for Bobby Kennedy.
That's correct. He was there. Rafer Johnson, the Olympic runner, and Rosie Greer were like celebrity bodyguards with Robert Kennedy when the night he was assassinated.
Yeah, sure answer.
And Merlin Olsen, that's amazing that they had two actor types on that line and they were still fearsome.
Yeah. Like you didn't look at them off the field. Remember Fred Dreyer?
Yeah, what was his deal?
Well, he was in a show called Hunter. And Fred famously played in a Super Bowl with a broken leg, defensive lineman. And a good-looking guy. I mean, he looked Hollywood. Yeah, Paul.
A lot of these guys got defensive players, specifically got acting roles. Merlin Olsen got Father Murphy. That was on like a decade. John Matuszak from the Raiders had a bunch of acting roles.
Wait, was Merlin on Little House on the Prairie?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought.
Yep. Alex Karras was an actor for 20 years. He was a big-time actor. There's a bunch more. Lyle Alzado got acting roles.
Dick Butkus,
Bob Golic.
Isn't that interesting, though, that defensive players were getting a lot of, you know, Mean Joe Green doing the Coca-Cola commercial?
Yeah, you mentioned Fred Dreyer, Rosie Greer. Yeah. There's a bunch of them.
Did you say Bubba Smith?
Bubba did the Miller Lite commercial.
And he also was a Police Academy, right?
Yes, Police Academy. Yes, Eaton.
Why do defensive players have better personalities than offensive players? I don't get it.
They're real people. We can identify. We can relate to them. Maybe that's what it is. Who would be a defensive player on our team?
J.J. Watt, Bad Moms. He crushed it. Yeah. Soccer coach. Mm-hmm. He's actually pretty fun when he got off.
He's, he was good, though.
Clay Matthews.
Yep.
When Clay and...
Pitch Perfect. Yeah. Don't hesitate.
No, I know.
You've
know.
seen it like three times.
I know. I did. I always stumble on that. I'm not quite sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Still have it taped.
Jalen Ramsey feels like he wants to jump into movies.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who else can you see? I'm trying to think if there's any other big-time personalities.
Richard Sherman's not really an actor. He feels more like a commentator, right?
Yeah. Miles Garrett has a personality there.
Oh, Chase Young?
Yeah, well, we're gonna find out how that personality is when he sees Tommy. Hashtag Tommy. All right, we'll take a break here. Phone call's coming up. And let me see. Anything else I need to mention? Also, we'll bring back a couple things that Albert Breer had to say. The Philadelphia Eagles situation I found really interesting. And thought Albert put himself out there with what he thought was going on Sunday night. And, you know, there's a couple other things going on with the Rams situation with Jared Goff. And, you know, Sean McVay knows, I think, who he's going to start. But he has no interest in telling the Seahawks, which I certainly understand that. All right, if I'm the Seattle Seahawks, I'm preparing for both. But I would be preparing for John Wolford. Because that is somebody that is new to the Rams in his style. You know, he rushed for, you know, 50-some yards. And he wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. He wasn't Nate Sudfeld. But, you know, he gave them that extra dimension that I think if you're Seattle, then you have to at least be aware of that. Take a break. Back after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Nick Saban's daughter has apologized for a tweet about Ohio State and Justin Fields.
I love the SEC, man.
I know.
What a great start to a segment.
Yeah, you probably didn't think you would hear those words out of my mouth anytime soon, that Nick Saban's daughter has apologized for a tweet that, you know, kind of blaming COVID that you might have to move the national title game for another week so Justin Fields will get healthy. And she has since apologized for that because the national title game is still scheduled to be Monday night. Roll Tide. But I don't know. That'd give you an extra week for Jalen Waddle to be healthier if you're Alabama, if you needed another week for Justin Fields. I don't know. You know, they don't have to list injuries. There's no injury report with college football, but I mean, more credit, more power to Justin Fields if, you know, you're just a little bruised. If you've been in a car accident, there are times after the accident where you go, damn, where'd that come from? You know, all of a sudden you got a bruise or, you know, your shoulder or neck, and that might be what happened because that was a collision. That was a car crash. Yeah, McClellan.
Does this totally change everything we think about Justin Fields? Like now he's a tough guy, kind of, because he was really struggled the 2 weeks before, right? You had talked about him being off.
He had a great night. And if he has another great night, if he beats Alabama, then I wonder, no, he's not going number one overall. But would he go number two? I don't want to say it that way.
We're going to cut that up.
Would he go as the second pick in the draft? Yes, McClellan.
But isn't it unfair to judge a prospect by one game? Don't you have to look at the body of work? It seems silly that one game could determine a draft spot.
Are you new here?
I know. I feel like that's... but I'm wondering, is that the way the media does it, or do teams do it differently? I know we will,
oh,
not
media.
You necessarily.
Oh, no, the media. No, not teams.
Teams look at the body of work, right?
Yeah, you can't go, God, that guy was really good in that one game. Let's draft him. I would think you would want to. That's why when I was assessing Joe Burrow, now assessing him through a source, I said, as much credit as I want to give him for the greatest season a quarterback has ever turned in college football history, in my opinion, I have to go back to the previous year where he was sort of pedestrian. And he went from being maybe a fourth or fifth round pick to the number one pick overall. So somewhere in between was Joe Burrow, in my opinion. And then I realized, you know, that Cincinnati was going to take him number one, and by all accounts, they made the right choice there. Yeah, Paul.
I've been thinking about this a lot the past couple months. Which of the sports media hot takers is most likely to say that Trevor Lawrence should not be the number one pick and blank quarterback should? Because someone's going to do that for attention. Because you know it's coming if it hasn't already. Some analyst, some
yeah,
hot
but they
taker.
They have to follow college football, and a lot of these hot takers don't cover.
But that won't stop him from saying it on the show that Trevor Lawrence should not be the number one pick. It should be Fields. It should be Wilson, blank, blank. It's going to happen for attention.
I don't want to handicap the hot takers here, But yeah, somebody will do that. But, you know, I go back to what Kirk Herbstreit said earlier in the year. I think he looked at Justin Fields as better, or he would be better as a pro than Trevor Lawrence. So Herbie said that on our show months ago. Yeah, McLovin.
Is it possible that all the, you know, the Leaf Manning dynamic will be Zach Wilson, Justin Fields instead of Trevor Lawrence? So that we need a quarterback debate. There's always a quarterback debate.
Well, who's the second best quarterback is going to be the debate. Like who goes second behind Trevor Lawrence? And do the Jets take a quarterback? Does somebody trade up to get a quarterback? Yeah, McLovin.
I heard Kuiper say someone could trade up to two to take the left tackle out of Oregon, too. That's not out of
Sewell.
Penny Sewell, because maybe the quarterbacks go 3-4-5 instead of two.
Well, that would be what the if I'm the Bengals, that's what I would be looking at. I would trade up and let's not do what the Colts did to Andrew Luck, that they waited too long to reinforce, you know, that offensive line. You got Quentin Nelson, but it was too late. Damage was done to Andrew Luck. Yeah, Paul.
I think Miami with the third pick is really interesting, because what if somehow the Jets take a quarterback and it's not Fields, and Justin Fields is still available with the third pick in the draft? Miami's sitting there. They've already got a bunch of draft picks, but they would have teams like Philadelphia, Detroit, Carolina, et cetera, jumping for that pick.
Yeah, the Dolphins, that trade with Laremy Tunsil turned out to be pretty good, right? We got the third pick in the draft. Do you see where J.J. Watt apologized to Deshaun Watson for basically wasting a year? Wasting a great year by Deshaun Watson? Yeah, I can't imagine that J.J. is going to be there next year. I think the Packers, you know, it always sounds like, you know, that'd be the place for him to go. But I don't know. I just can't imagine. I don't even know what Houston's doing. Like, Houston keeps picking fruit from the Patriots tree, and the fruit is not good. They keep going, you know what? We're going to try it again. We're going to get a GM here. We're going to get a coach here. We're going to get an assistant coach. We're going to keep getting these guys from the Belichick tree. And even Deshaun Watson, not pleased with who they picked.
Nick Caserio?
Yeah, but he had been rumored to be going there for a while.
I mean, he helped build the Patriots. I feel like this is the guy we're getting ripped for. Like, I felt like most teams want this guy if he built the Patriots.
No,
with,
I don't.
With Belichick?
I don't know. But it's like Josh McDaniels. I mean, he's not getting a job. Yeah, see.
But, like, what coaching tree should you be picking from then if it's not the Belichick one?
I don't know if I would be looking at a tree. I wouldn't go, boy, he was there with Bill. Let's take him.
But everybody comes from somebody else's.
Yeah, but the Texans keep going back to the Patriots. That's the problem I have, that maybe you look in a different forest here. It's like, we'll take Romeo Crennel. We're going to take Wes Welker, I think, was an assistant coach with them. And they're just like, we're going to get one of those guys. Yeah, maybe this is the one that'll work. Final hour coming up. Get some more phone calls. Seton Pauley, Fritzy McLovin. Yours truly here on the Dan Patrick Show. One more item in the second hour. Take me up on this offer. And it's a great offer to start the new year. Any day, for that matter. DanPatrick.com. Enter in official rules. Your chance to win a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. It's got TVs, a wood pellet grill. It's great for tailgating, camping, anything you want to do. You hit the road with this, people are going to notice. Mercedes-Benz van. They have the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van or the versatile Mercedes-Benz Metris, and each are tailored to match your work or playing lifestyle. They have options like blind spot assist, active lane keep assist, the MBUX voice command technology. You get directions, weather forecast, comfort control, and more. Mercedes-Benz knows what they're doing, right? And enter in to win this contest, Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. Go to foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com. The sweepstakes end January 24, 2021. Some of the equipment described is optional. Good luck.